Johnny Rip, Johnny Rip. You fought all the way, Johnny Rip. Saw you a marching with Robert E. Lee. You held your head high, trying to win the victory. You fought for your folks, but you didn't die in vain. Even though you lost, they speak highly of your name. 'Cause you fought all the way, Johnny Rip, Johnny Rip. You fought all the way, Johnny Rip. Welcome back, friends and countrymen, to another episode of Confederate Radio with your host, Lieutenant Colonel Bryce, CSA2. There's a lot to get into today. We're going to be going over some of the massacres of Confederate soldiers by Yankee troops. There's also a lot going on in the world today that we're going to be trying to get into as well. And I believe they're direct results of what happened during the war between the states and after the unconstitutional acts during Reconstruction. We find ourselves every day faced with more and more news about mass shootings done by Democrats, and usually with people who have mental health issues that are very much promoted by the Democrats. They either don't know their gender, they're revolutionary, feminist, socialists, or card-carrying communists. And then they go shoot up places, and then the Democrats start calling for gun control. You know, that was one of the big reasons that we had the Revolutionary War. They were calling for gun control on the colonies, and they resisted. And now we find them calling for gun control, banning all assault-style weapons. They don't want us to be on the same foot. Well, we will never be on the same foot as the standing federal army. Like, we just never will be. But with an assault rifle, you have a chance. Without assault rifle, you don't have a chance. And it's funny that you see this because the assault is more on the Constitution and our personal freedoms than anything. You see, with this ban on rifles, the attack on militias. Now, you've got to remember that the militia is what founded this country. It was the militias who rose up and threw off the yoke of imperialistic tyranny of Great Britain. It was the militias that won the war. It was the militias that trained to defend their communities before the war. And you've seen that in the invasion of the southern states. Leading up to the federal invasion of the South, you had men like John Hunt Morgan, who had the Lexington Rifles. You had men like Joe Shelby, who participated in the Blue Lodges. That's what they called the militias in Missouri during the border conflict with Kansas. You've seen men preparing throughout the country, predominantly in the South, as it's a more agrarian society, martial society. Most of the wars have been fought, yes, by Yankees as well, but by a large number of Southern men. And that's how it's been throughout the ages. So I implore all to follow in the footsteps of our ancestors and form legal, remember the word legal, militias, unorganized militias, because everybody in a state is part of the unorganized militia. If you look at your state constitution, no matter what state you are in, men from usually 18 to 64 are considered part of the unorganized militia. So, just like our ancestors did, I would implore, encourage, and promote men forming gun clubs, men forming, you know, the neighborhood watches, men training, learning how to use weapons search and rescue tactics, basic combat formations, and first aid classes. Do that. Learn them. Get to know your neighbors. You know, do a community block watch. The things have gone crazy. Just look at what they were reporting on. I seen it today, but teenage takeover in Chicago, where tourists were attacked. Teenagers ran into the streets with guns. Tourists were fleeing the sound of gunfire. Windows were being broken and shops were broken into. Cars were attacked. Things like this are happening all over the country. And the only thing that you can do as a man is to defend your family. Follow the law. Be a good citizen. And protect those around you. That's been the duty of man since the beginning of time. It has been to protect the family, protect the community. And don't let yourself be made into a slave. One of my favorite phrases is the American government is a wooden gun pointed at the people. And it very much so is, because the American government derived its authority from the militias, from the civilians. It was created by the militias. And now you find that government has grown so heady and drunk with power that they wish to take away the right of a citizen to defend himself and his family from an overreaching federal government. Because that's one of the reasons that you don't find the Declaration of Independence taught in schools. Because the Declaration of Independence specifically tells you that when a government becomes tyrannical, you have the right, nay, the duty to overthrow that government. The Second Amendment has nothing to do with hunting or personal protection. It is written by the men who wrote the Declaration of Independence, declaring that tyrannical governments are unjust and must be cut down. And so saying, do not give up your rights to your weapons. Form organizations. That's what our southern ancestors did before the war between the states. There was militia networks across the South. That's how we were able to then fight off a federal army for 4 years. We were able to form a government, form an army, and defend our homeland for 4 years against a federal occupying force. Don't ever forget that. There's something I'm going to school right now again. I'm trying to get my business degree because I've got some money coming at me from Greyhound wreck. Allegedly, I'll have some money coming at me. There's a lawsuit. There was a Greyhound wreck. I was injured pretty badly. And I wanted to get a degree in business so that I can learn to better manage my money, hopefully build up some things that can help some people, and I can make some money while so doing. But Henry Thoreau wrote something called Civil Disobedience, and this is what I got to read in my writing class this week, and it kind of inspired me, especially with this podcast about our brave Southern heroes, the Confederate government that never surrendered and is still occupied to this day. The Southern states are an occupied nation. Like, let's not get that confused. Nobody of the Confederate government ever surrendered the government of the Confederacy. Yes, when Johnston surrendered, Breckinridge was there, and they proposed a surrender of the Confederate government and all forces. But this was quickly shot down by Washington, even though Burning Sherman endorsed it. So the Confederate government never was surrendered. But back to Mr. Thoreau and his civil disobedience. I want to read this to you guys, And then we'll get into more of the massacres and things that happened during the war between the states. Because you hear people all the time, my government wouldn't do that to me. Yeah, because you think that because you were brought up in a school that taught you how to be a good indentured servant to the occupying government. That school taught you how to obey and nothing more. If you were in sports, you learned a little bit about working together as a team. You learned basic mathematics, a very, very diluted form of history and other things. But you are predominantly taught how to obey those placed above you. And a lot of parents didn't teach their children not to believe everything they read, not to believe everything they hear. I got lucky enough. My stepfather taught me that. Don't believe everything you read, Bryce, is what I heard a lot. But now let me get into some reading on that note. So Henry Thoreau in Civil Disobedience says, I heartily accept the motto, the government is best which governs least. Limited government, what our forefathers fought for. And I should like to see it acted up to more rapidly and systematically carried out. It finally amounts to this, which also I believe. The government is best which governs not at all. And when men are prepared for it, that will be the kind of government which they will have. Government is at best but an expedient. But most governments are usually, and all governments are sometimes, inexpedient. The objections which have been brought against a standing army, and they are many and weighty, and deserve to prevail, may also at last be brought against a standing government. See, that's what we were talking about earlier. A standing federal army and a standing tyrannical federal government. The standing army is only an arm of the standing government. The government itself, which is only the mode which the people have chosen to execute their will, is equally liable to be abused and perverted before the people can act through it. Witness the present Mexican War, the work of comparatively a few individuals using the standing government as their tool. For in the outset, the people would not have consented to this measure. The American government, what is it but a tradition, though a recent one, endeavoring to transmit itself unimpaired to posterity, but each instant losing some of its integrity. Now, he's saying this during the Mexican War. That's a long time ago. How much more so of its integrity has it lost? It's death throes. The death throes of the government of Washington, Jefferson, Franklin, Hancock, and Madison was in 1861. Now what we have today is a bastardized version, a perverted dream of what those men dreamed. It has become their nightmare. It has become what was fought against in 1776. It has not the vitality and force of a single living man, for a single man can bend it to his will. It is a sort of wooden gun to the people themselves. But it is not the less necessary for this. For the people must have some complicated machinery or other and hear its din to satisfy the idea of government, which they have. Governments show thus how successfully men can be imposed upon. Even impose on themselves for their own advantage. It is excellent, we must all allow. Yet this government never of itself furthered any enterprise, but by the alacrity with which it got out of its way. It does not keep the country free. It does not settle the West. It does not educate. The character inherent in the American people has done all that has been accomplished, not the government. And it would have done somewhat more if the government had not sometimes got in its way. For government is an expedient by which men would fain succeed in letting one another alone. And as has been said, when it is most expedient, the governed are most let alone by it. Trade and commerce, if they were not made of India rubber, would never manage to bounce over obstacles which legislators are continually putting in their way. Illegal taxes. Our forefathers in the first revolution fought against these taxes. Our forefathers in the second American Revolution, the invasion of the southern states, the Southern War of Independence fought against another type of taxation, another federal tyranny. But we have suffered this same tyranny generation after generation after generation, coming to the culmination in ours. That we've seen in 2020, that we've seen in 2021, 2022, and now 2023. But you have men like Q. These Q drops that people keep getting. That has convinced some of the most able-bodied and smartest men of our generation that there is some shadowy figure giving information that only he has. And nobody realizes this is a false flag operation. You have operations like this to stop men from promoting the truth, from teaching others, because those men think everything's handled, everything's being taken care of. It's a savior complex. We've seen it over and over again. We see it in the conservative parties. We see it in conspiracy theorists, if you want to call them that now, after their whole COVID-19 thing was kind of proved. You see it just about everywhere in every branch of society. You know, people have a savior complex. They must have a savior to come save them. But the only savior that we have is Jesus on the last day. And the Bible over and over tells us that we must act truthfully with our neighbor. Thou shalt not lie is probably one of the most abused of the Ten Commandments. The one most oft broken behind honor thy father and mother. And this is done. This has been brought down upon us by federal tyranny. And it has been since 1861. But back to this quotation or this reading of Henry Thoreau. And if one were to judge these men wholly by the effects of their actions and not partly by their intentions, they would deserve to be classed and punished with those mischievous persons who put obstructions on the railroads. But to speak practically and as a citizen, unlike those who call themselves no government men, I ask for not at once no government, but at once a better government. Let every man know what kind of government would command his respect, and that will be one step towards obtaining it. So I implore all of you, dream about the government that you want, but don't just dream. Yes, that is one step. Actively move towards it. You can run for political office. You can run for mayor. You can run for sheriff. You can run for city council, state representative, house of representatives, congressman, and governor. The problem that we face today is the educated. Now, I'm not saying all educated men are bad, but the problem is that people go into a field, and that field is politics. They spend their whole lives in politics, having done nothing other than politics. And this must be stopped. Men must work, must see the world, then run for office. That is why we have age limits in the Constitution, state constitutions, on the age that you can run for office, because you were supposed to have lived, worked, wed, had children, built a business, worked for somebody, and then gone into politics. You were not supposed to have gone to elementary, middle school, high school, college, 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 and then go to office. But you were not supposed to have been working in politics your whole life. None of the men during the revolution worked in politics their whole life, and they governed this country well. Part of these reasons that we see today are the reasons that our southern ancestors wanted to leave this union. They seen the evil, they seen the tyranny. And then they were derided, fit men to be scorned after the war. And that's what the Yankee government has done ever since the war. They have derided our heroes, they have torn them down, and they have masked their atrocities. And atrocities, there were many. Look at Atlanta, burned to the ground. Look at Sherman's march to the sea, burning courthouses, burning fields, putting women out, sending women up north to work in factories. This happened throughout the war. Our southern nation was occupied, was brutalized, raped, and burned. But we're the bad guys. We're always going to be the bad guys. That's just how it is, as long as we don't have our people in government. And so again, I'm going to implore you, listeners, friends, countrymen, southern patriots, citizens of an occupied country, run for office, build militias, skill shares. Don't call them militias, though. I did that once, and we seen that organization ripped apart, torn down by prosecutors and federal agencies. And we were a multiracial organization that went out to protect our communities and help our first responders. So be careful. Call yourself a gun club, skill sharing group, prepper organization. And go out and train. Join your state defense forces. State defense forces are usually no more than 100 to 300 men. Join them, learn what you can, become officers, and get ready for whatever is to come. Because we never know. That's what people forget. Things change in a heartbeat. Everybody should have learned that on 9/11. 1 minute you're going about your day, the next buildings are getting blown up and people are jumping off of them. It happens like that. Nothing is constant. Nothing is ever changing. The Romans thought that things were constant and never changing. Look what happened to them. The Byzantine Empire. The Islamic Caliphates. Yeah, everything's going fine, and then you got some crusaders in Jerusalem. You know, things change in a heartbeat. The whole medieval world thought things were one way, and then you had Mongol hordes taking over. Just because you are comfortable does not mean that it's going to be like that forever. Get prepared. Know your history. Teach your friends. Teach your family. But I want to get into some of the massacres that happened, because I hear so much, you know, my government would never do that. You know, they're not going to do anything bad. Ask the Indians what happened to them. Like, I've lived on reservations. I've seen what has happened to a once proud people. I've read the treaties that were broken time and time and time and time again. Look, if you look at it in our own southern history, you had the five civilized tribes, so-called civilized tribes of Oklahoma, who ended up fighting under Albert Pike. You had Native Americans who answered the call, the Catawba tribe in North Carolina. You know, the Choctaw, the Mississippi Choctaw, the Cherokee, Seminole. Many, the Sioux Uprising of 1862 during the height of the war between the states, which also led to the largest mass execution on American soil. 30 Sioux braves were hung in one day. It's disgusting what the government will do to you if it doesn't agree with you. So, I am so tired of hearing it, and I hope to never hear it again. My government would not do that to me, because they will, and they'll do it over and over and over. They will burn your towns to the ground. They will savage your women. They will do what they are ordered to do. That's the problem with a standing army. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't have a standing army. I'm just saying there are problems with it. If bad men control the standing government, then the standing army is just an arm of that corrupt and diseased body. Now, I love my country, but I also love my history, and I know my history. I love my heritage. I know my heritage. And I will love my country and support my country against all outsiders, but I will also know what my government is capable of. Do you see Democrats shooting up everywhere and conservatives getting blamed? You don't see conservatives shooting at anybody until the government comes on their property. That's how it's always been since the beginning of time. And I dare say that it will be until the end of time. But one of the, so this is towards the end of the war. It's actually a reenactment that I've been to, and I enjoyed until the one where we got rained out. It's Fort Blakely. So I'm going to read a very short article on what happened at Fort Blakely. And it gets into the Confederate prisoners that were killed there. And it's just one of those little known things from the war that people don't read about, people don't hear about, because it is not concurrent or conductive to the Yankee narrative that only Confederates committed massacres. So, Fort Blakely, a massacre of white Confederates by black Union troops. The attack on Fort Blakely during the late afternoon hours, 5:30 p.m. of April 9th, 1865, had no impact on the outcome of the war. Yet the fighting was as vicious as any that had been. In the post-war years, accusations of atrocities committed by black troops on white Confederates surfaced. The eyewitness accounts were uneven and at times disputed. Even to this day, the degree of his atrocities are still in dispute. Sorry, I had to take a drink of coffee. A 1998 article in America's Civil War by Thomas G. Rogers titled Last Stand at Fort Blakely. The author skirts, for the most part, the racial aspects of the fight. Rogers simply noted that black troops charged as they yelled, "Remember Fort Pillow," and that the Confederates were fearful of these former slaves. Some Confederates were bayoneted, and the author admits the two white officers killed while trying to restrain the Negroes. But for the most part, Rogers stays away from the more controversial aspects of the fight, even at one point ending a quote prematurely. I'm also going to avoid the racial stuff, especially in our environment, not because I'm scared, but because I just don't want to get into it and embolden parties on either side to take action for slights And I don't want somebody to go out shooting people and be like, well, I heard it on freaking Confederate radio. That's what fucking got me to do this. You know what I mean? And I don't want anybody to be attacked for quoting this. But what pretty much had happened here at Blakely was the black troops, they were predominantly ex-slaves. They came over the battlements and they ended up using the parlance at the time, the Confederate officers did, and the Union officers to call them what they called black men back then and women. So there was some epithets thrown at each other. And then when Blakely fell, men were bayoneted, clubbed to death, butchered, and shot in cold blood. In Fox's Regimental Losses, it is meekly mentioned that the closing battle of the war, the victorious assault on Fort Blakely, April 9th, 1865, a colored division bore a conspicuous and honorable part. Which is not a surprise, however, most accounts tend to follow suit and steer clear of the controversial and racial aspects of the fight. In a way, it was the first race conflict of the post-Civil War era. All participants involved knew the war was in its final stages, each wanting to wage its own private war. Now, I don't see how Confederates inside of a fort being attacked wanted to wage their own private war. That seems like something the author's just putting out there to cover his ass. But if you are in a fort, the war is ending. You are being attacked by divisions of ex-slaves, and you are Confederate. Maybe you own slaves, maybe you didn't. But the stories of the war, like, in one of the opening days of the war, you have the Battle of Elkhorn Tavern, where Kansas colored infantry troops massacred Confederate prisoners. So you might have a little fear in your heart when you're outnumbered and your breastworks are being stormed. So I don't believe the Confederates were waging their own private war. Chaos reigned supreme during any battle, but this one took on a sharper edge as Confederates began to flee from the lines in fear of capture. Chaos turned into desperation at times, both for those who fled and those who stayed and fought to the death. Rebels in front of the colored troops rushed towards the center for surrender as the cry of Fort Pillow, with a red flannel rag on the end of a musket of the colored troops, was not very encouraging for the rebel chivalry. And to the credit of the colored troops, be it said, General Hawkins' division did as well as any. Thus wrote Henry Carl Ketzel of the 37th Illinois Volunteer Infantry after the last great charge of the Civil War at Fort Blakely, Alabama. And so what we see here is them yelling, because we talked about this in the last episode, Fort Pillow and the alleged massacre that happened there. The Yankee propaganda machine has put out so many articles about a massacre at Fort Pillow. Even though the general there offered them surrender terms, there was no surrender terms offered here. There was a charge. There was the United States colored troops with a red flag raised above their muskets. The red flag, not the black flag, the red flag. So when you raise the black flag, that means that you are going to take no prisoners. No men will be prisoners. No combatants, no men of military age will be spared. Women and children will be, though. When you raise the red flag in war, the red flag means women, children, men, boys, girls are going to be butchered. There's going to be no prisoners, combatants or non-combatants. So when they tried to surrender, this is what they seen. The last great charge of the Civil War at Fort Blakely is how General Hawkins' division did well. And that's what Henry Carl Ketzel of the 37th Illinois Volunteer Infantry said. A Confederate survivor described the fighting as the Yankee Fort Pillow. Reports of bayoneting and executing of Confederate prisoners are not uncommon, even by some federal white troops who witnessed the events. However, time and again, the black troops are described by their white counterparts as having distinguished themselves, with one going so far as to say they did the most by capturing much of Fort Blakely. By far, most accounts by white federal soldiers were ones praising the fighting of the black soldiers. One in particular left noting their fighting prowess and the atrocities declared, "Who can blame them? The former slaves. They were seeking to lay some deed at the altar of slavery." But still, those positive reports cannot diminish the bloody nature of the fighting that day. After being captured, a soldier with the 62nd Alabama Volunteers noted, "Years later, we were guarded by Negro troops, most of them being from the South. They cursed us and called us by all the vulgar names they could think of, even calling us blank. And we had to take it or be shot." He was lucky to have survived. Many fearful of those former slaves, now armed and blue, either fought to the death, fled to the river and drowned, were shot down, or executed when captured. The fighting was short but intense, and emotions ran high for both white and black Union soldiers. The Confederates had buried landmines in front of the fort and along the roads leading to the fort that for days before the fight randomly went off and killed dozens and caused much disgruntlement for both white and black soldiers. Tensions were high, and numerous white troops noted as such in their letters. When the 119th Illinois Infantry entered the fort after a hailstorm of fire and explosions from landmines, Captain Henry Cross, who had just seen his mate John Myers torn to pieces with a grape shot, greased his bayonet with the fattest of the gunners. White soldiers easily lost their cool and were not immune to murdering prisoners, and it is not hard to imagine the same from their black counterparts. Just earlier this year, an article in the Alabama Heritage magazine by Jim Knowles dealt with the fall of Fort Blakely. Once again, the subject of race and warfare was sidestepped for the most part. The highly charged quotes that could have been used were ignored. Knowles does do a far better job than Rogers, however, writing that the allegation of captured Confederate troops being murdered by vengeful Union troops, particularly United States colored troops, would plague the battle for most of the post-war period. It should be noted both Rogers and Knowles' focus was not on the nature of the fighting, but the events that led up to the fight and the outcome of the fight. The fighting at Fort Blakely was a fairly rare event in Civil War history, as the taking of the fort was determined mainly by hand-to-hand combat. Most Civil War combat was from a distance of several hundred yards, and when charged, lines often broke and soldiers fled. Which makes sense. That's what you hear when you're reenacting. Most people didn't stand and take a charge. They broke, retreated, and fired at the chargers. Which makes sense. If somebody was charging me, and if I could, I would get away and shoot at them while they were still charging. It just makes sense. But this is one of the many atrocities of the war between the states that the government, if not sanctioned, did not punish. And that's how it was for Atlanta. That's how it was for many of the cities. What about Columbia, South Carolina? Charleston, South Carolina? All those places. It said that the troops, when they captured that, they blamed Charleston for secession. And so blaming Charleston for secession heaped outrage and indecency, burning, pillaging, raping, and murdering like the Yankee troops do that city. And it was allowed to happen by Vernon, Sherman, Grant, and Lincoln. Everybody who was anybody in the Union armies, they did not care. They wanted to visit total war on the civilian population. They wanted to root out, seed and stem the independent spirit of the Southern people, the freedom-loving spirit of the Southern people, the law-abiding and constitution-loving spirit of the Southern people. And it is sad that we see that today. It's sad that I'm sitting here talking about many modern problems that stem from the war between the states as they are unfolding daily. I try not to look at my phone anymore because every time I go on Google to look something up, a new outrage, a new shooting, a new unconstitutional act by our government is being reported on. To the point where we have American soldiers in Ukraine fighting Russians. And when it is reported on, we're being told by one news station, this isn't true. We're being told by another news station that the other news station is covering it up. We have found that the White House has worked with the large news agencies that everybody listens to. Your family, your friends, everybody is tuning into these and getting told lies. These news stations conspired with the United States government to hide from the American people that there is American soldiers fighting in Ukraine against Russians. That our government has decided to risk nuclear war with another nation. They have decided to endanger our children and not tell us about it and lie to us about it. This is why our forefathers left the Union of the States. And the indignities that were heaped upon them almost do not come close to what our government does to us today. There was another massacre that I wanted to get into, the St. Charles Massacre. And this one, it happened in Missouri. So the St. Charles was the most famous hotel in northeast Arkansas. In 1862, it had been the headquarters for all Confederate troops west of the Mississippi River. In 1863, its owner, William Evans, army recruiter for northeast Arkansas, was assassinated in the lobby of the hotel. That same year, Confederate General Jeff Thompson, known as the Missouri Swamp Fox, was captured at the hotel with several prominent local Confederates. Later in 1863, most of downtown Pocahontas was burned by Union soldiers, but not the St. Charles. They saved the hotel so it could serve as Union headquarters. It was still Union headquarters in April 1865 when a group of Confederate soldiers rode up to the hotel on horses. And at this hotel, you find several Confederates riding up to surrender. Yankees are using this as Yankee headquarters. The men ride up. They get off their horses under a white flag of truce. And the Yankees then gun down several of them in front of this hotel. It's just like what they did with Jesse James when he rode up to surrender when the war was over. He rode up under a white flag of truce and he got shot in the chest. That's probably part of the reason that he went into outlawry. He never surrendered. He fought on. And all the men of his gang were men who in the early days had fought with him in Quantrill's Raiders and with Bloody Bill Anderson and the rest. You know, those men had witnessed a cruel form of warfare, border warfare, you know, neighbor against neighbor. And saying that does not, like, give you the right idea of how horrible it really was. It was, imagine in your neighborhood, you're sitting there, you know, a war starts out, you know, some of your friends, you know, your neighbor on the left of you, they decide to go fight for one side. Neighbor on the right of you decides to go fight for another. You know, your neighbor across the way, he's fighting on a side. You know where all these people have gone to fight, who they've gone to fight for. And then you join up another side. And then let's say while you're off fighting, you know, one of those guys, your neighbor on the right, they know you're fighting for the opposing side, so they go burn out your mama's house.
and shoot your little brother and then put your mama out into the streets with your sisters. And then, you know where their family lives. So you go burn out their uncle's house, kill their uncle, this, that, and the other. That's what the warfare was like that Jesse James and the rest of them went through for 4 years. This went on. So these men, thinking the war is over, they ride to the St. Charles Hotel and find themselves met with a hail of bullets. And the Yankees, of course, they're going to say, we didn't know they came to surrender. We didn't know this. We didn't know that. But they did. And they murdered them just like they did. And the whole thrust of this episode is about the massacres, the things that your government will do to you, that they will do to people, and then they will spend years, decades, a century and a half covering up what they do, not putting it in the history books. Remember, they didn't put it in the history books that this was a noble clash between large armies because one side wanted to end slavery and the other wanted to free the slaves, which that is very much untrue. And if you two of the best books that I've written on the subject, I just compiled. I looked for quotes. It's In Their Words, Quotes of the Men in Gray, and the companion volume to that, In Their Words, Quotes of the Men in Blue. I implore you, not because I'm going to make any money off of them, but to read them. That's why I wrote them, is to put out these ideas that I keep trying to tell people about. Read them for yourself, then cross-check them. The Yankees said over and over, we are not fighting for slavery. The generals did. I think about Joshua Chamberlain was the only one who was fighting for his high-minded principles, which, I respect that. But the others, Lincoln, Sherman, Grant, and the rest, I don't respect what they did. And what they did was wage an unconstitutional war on the southern states to subjugate them. And they told you about it, that they cared nothing for the slaves. But what I don't respect about our government is that they don't put that into the school books. They don't teach you that. They tell you, against all of these men's admonitions, that they were fighting to free one group of people. Now, if the war was actually about that, I think a lot of people would feel differently on it, on both sides. Or if things like that were taught, people would feel differently on both sides. But it wasn't. And that's one of the things that upsets me, is because my family members, I had over 20 family members fighting the Confederate State Service, that these men were fighting for the preservation of an institution that they had no hand in or part of. And so don't sit there and tell me what I know to be true is not true. Don't tell me that these books I've read by men who fought during that time period aren't true. Don't tell me that the Yankees didn't commit massacres, because they did over and over and over and over. Kansas colored troops murdering Confederate soldiers during the, Price's Raid. That happened, I think, near Camden. Then you had those same troops at the Battle of Elkhorn Tavern, or as the Yankees call it, Pea Ridge. That's where my great-great-grandfather, John Belcher, was killed. But we have this over and over, this propaganda machine that the federal government uses.
They murdered them just like they did.
You find this over and over throughout the war. Fort Blakely, Elkhorn Tavern, St. Charles Hotel, many others, that you have to do a deep dive on the internet to find any of this. You can't even just Google it. You can't go on Bing or the large search engines and then find this stuff. You have to deep dive for it if you don't already know about it. You have to ask your Confederate groups. You have to ask the Southern Independence Association. You have to ask CSA 2. You have to ask your friends in the SCV. Like, hey, have you heard anything about any of these? Can you send me any documentation relating to it? Thank God. You know, some people have this information in hand. Now, there's many more we could go over, but we've already spent an hour going over just these two little ones and some of the things that are going on today. So like I said earlier, I implore everybody, get prepared. Prepare like you're preparing for a natural disaster. You know, that's exactly what our ancestors did. They prepared all summer. They prepared up. They stockpiled food through summer and fall to get ready for a winter. Because they weren't like us. They didn't work the 40-hour week. They didn't work all year long. They worked from planting season to harvesting, planting, harvesting again. In some areas, they had three growing seasons. And then in the winter, they took off with their families. They stayed at home till the winter was over. And they took care of the home front. They taught their children. They interacted with their families. And they had food, meat, game all stored up for that winter. And that's what we should do as well, I believe. Every Southern-minded individual run for office, form gun clubs, get the things you need for the coming winter. And just like that Game of Thrones show, winter is coming. Just always think that winter's coming. And try and emulate your ancestors. Follow the Lord and His commandments. You know, go out and make disciples of all the nations. Everything that we do should be in following His commandments and honoring our mother and father. So go out, get ready to take care of your home, build up networks, network with people, other Southern-minded individuals. And I just launched the Confederate Military Surplus Store. So, you know, if you want to get some stuff there, or get some stuff, you know, on Amazon. Wherever you need to get stuff, get stuff. I don't like to bring too much modern into this, but at this point, you have to. Buy yourself some silver. I don't sell that, but eBay's a good place for it. You can get it pretty close to spot price. But get yourself some silver. Get yourself some food. Get yourself some basic things that you're going to need. And just trust and follow the Lord while you're preparing. You know, be the smart servant. Be the good servant that they talk about in the Bible. But again, my friends and countrymen, Confederate Radio, signing off, Lieutenant Colonel Bryce in the CSA 2, SIA member, wishing y'all good night.
Marching with Robert E. Lee. You held your head high, trying to win the victory. You fought for your folks, but you didn't die in vain. Even though you lost, they speak highly of your name. 'Cause you fought all the way, Johnny Rip, Johnny Rip. You fought all the way.